code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 26th of January 2009. For newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and you can download as many of the previous talks I've given as you wish. I try to give you shortcuts through this incredibly complex system in which we live, so that you can see the big picture and understand that the world doesn't stumble along down through time and pick itself up after accidents and decide what to do, but rather the future is always planned by those in power. That should be no news at all to those who studied the projects, because they announce what to do at the top. They go into their books at the top. They tell you how they plan things way ahead. It's just like big business and doing investments for 50 years or 100 years in the future. It's the same idea. And we find in the United Nations, for instance, they have 50-year projects for one, 100 years for another, maybe 150 for another project. That's what foundations and institutes can do. They can make a mandate and hire people, retire them, hire more people, and stick to the mandate and pull it off. The communist system is run exactly the same way. We're now using that system across the world with 5-year plans for one thing, 10 for another, 15, etc. That's how it's run. And we're going into the big planned society where every minute detail of your life will be not only monitored but planned for you. That's the utopia they're bringing in. Also look into alanwattsentinel.eu and you can download transcripts of these talks written in the various languages of Europe. You print them up and pass them around to your friends. It's funny how synchronicities work, because at the weekend, for the first time in ages, I turned on the Rabbit Ear TV, where I get two stations, and watch the public broadcasting giving one of his propaganda spiels, and as they're famous to do, about global warming and how the crops are failing across the world. And the whole program was about one man in a small team, supposedly with limited funds, who went across all the way into Syria looking for original seed, supposedly to help the farmers in countries like Australia, who find their crops are failing. They're failing because they've standardized seed. Standardized seed. Every seed is the same as the next seed. And if something hits them, pestilence or anything else, or they can't stand a dry season, they all go under. It all perishes. And during the program, it was interesting to watch how they went to get original seeds in little valleys and canyons and so on across not only the Middle East, but as I say, even right in to Syria itself, and they hit pay dirt where people had not accepted, and here's what came out, they had not accepted standardized seeds for anything from all the aid agencies that had come in there for the last 30 years, dumping their modified seeds on them. And that's really the problem. The modified seeds might be okay, fine for Pennsylvania, but they do no good in Australia or anywhere else if they have 10, 15 years of dry season. And what they also said was that the average crop in Syria of even lentils had maybe 15 different kinds of local lentils in it. That way, if pests hit them, one strain might go down, but the rest would be resistant to it. Each one has its own properties. So that's really the problem that's been happening today. To do with the fact that standardized seed for uniform crops are so vulnerable to so many different things that when the crop goes under, the whole crop goes under, and then you've got problems. I'll be back with more after this break.
toxic heavy metals. They're in the air we breathe, water we drink, our food, products we use, objects we touch, and they negatively impact our health by building up within the body over time. But now, toxic metals can be mobilized in a safe, effective manner with Chelarex from scienceformulas.com. Chelarex is an oral chelator developed from Dr. Alan Greenberg's clinical experience with heavy metal poisoning during his 25 years of medical practice. Chelarex contains absolutely zero synthetic chelation agents, which frequently cause adverse side effects. Chelarex contains all natural ingredients that enhance the body's natural mechanisms for excreting heavy metals and protects against reabsorption. Chelarex effectively mobilizes mercury, aluminum, lead, and 15 other heavy metals. Try Chelarex now from scienceformulas.com with this RBN special offer. Purchase two bottles, get one free with free shipping. Limited time offer. Go to scienceformulas.com. That's scienceformulas.com. Chelarex. Chelation of toxic heavy metals the way nature intended.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johnglia.com.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Hi folks, I am Alan Watt. We're Cutting Through the Matrix, the documentary I was talking about. Also showed at the end of the program who this particular man who was struggling through the heats of the desert and so on really was, as he rushed back to store all this natural seed that he'd found up in that island just off Norway, where they're storing it all for, you know, the survivors that are going to come through all the present crisis. And this ties in with what I was talking about last week, because I talked about a group who'd pretty well managed the history of 100 years for the whole last century, and they're managing this century as well. The Council on Foreign Relations, as it's better known, and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, as it's called in Britain, private organizations that literally have always been on both sides of everything, including all the conflicts. In fact, it's through conflict that their grand design seems to play out to their own ideals. Here's an article that ties in with this. Now, I told you a while ago that the CFR and the Royal Institute of International Affairs was involved and had done studies for years on this coming food problem that's been created across the planet, as I say, because they've standardized the seeds everywhere and encouraged people to just throw away the old stuff. And now they're helpless when their whole crop goes under to a pest or it can't handle a bit of drought. And much of their own stuff did handle the droughts. They could survive on very little moisture. This is planned this way because in all wars, you go for the food and the water, shelter, clothing, and all the rest of it follows after. This is from the FT.com, which is a group from the Financial Times, on the global economy. January the 26th, 2009, World Warned of Food Crunch Threat, by Javier Blas in London, first published 25th of January. It says the world faces the real risk of a food crunch if governments do not take immediate action to address the agricultural impact of climate change, with the weather change, and water scarcity, according to an authoritative report out on Monday. So there's your keywords, authoritative report. So it must be true. Chatham House, that's the headquarters for the Royal Institute for International Affairs, right? The London-based think tank, they managed to escape the name of it and just call it by the house name, Chatham House. The London-based think tank, the ones who have been running the world for the last 100 years, suggest the recent fall in food prices only a temporary reprieve and that prices are set to resume their upward trend once the world emerges from the current downturn. Like depression? Downturn? There is therefore a real risk of a food crunch at some point in the future, and you better believe it, because they're going to bring it on. Because that's the way to get us all to our knees into a new system, which would fall particularly hard on import-dependent countries and on poor people everywhere, the report states. Food prices are poised to rise again, it adds. The warning is made as agricultural ministers and United Nations officials gather from Monday in Madrid for a UN meeting on food security, likely to conclude that last year's food crisis with almost 1 billion people hungry is far from over, and these are the same agencies that dumped all the standardized seed across the planet. Remember that. The UN will warn ministers in Madrid that as the global financial crisis deepens, hunger is likely to increase under the impact of rising unemployment and lower remittances, according to three officials briefed ahead of the meeting. The prices of agricultural commodities such as rice and wheat jumped to a record high last year, triggering food riots from Haiti and Egypt to Bangladesh and Cameroon and prompting appeals for food aid for more than 30 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. But what's their answer to all of this? You'll see how it all ties in together. And it says here, near the bottom, it's always near the bottom after you scared the bejesus out of you. And that's the whole intent of the article. It says, recommends the governments to invest more in agricultural production and an increase in international aid in the sphere too. Containing global warming will require an additional $175 billion in annual investment by 2020, according to a European Union draft paper, writes Joshua Chaffin in Brussels. The paper says, much of the $175 billion, and then it's got $227 billion, €175 billion, $227 billion investment will have to be borne by the developed world. So the developed world, and see, this is right along with the GATT and the NAFTA treaties and all the other treaties, that the first world countries must basically bail out all the poor ones, bring them up to a certain standard, and that also is written in that the first world countries will start coming down. There'll be some happy medium as the water levels settle together. That's the whole thesis on this. This also forecasts that tens of billions of euros in spending will be needed to help poorer countries prepare for even moderate warming. Some of the ways the EU proposes to raise those funds include require developing nations to pay for their annual carbon emissions. They're all hammering on this, and Obama, of course, is pushing this in the States, the carbon emissions, and levying taxes on aviation and maritime transportation. That's everything that comes into your country, all the food and everything. The EU should also expand its emissions trading system into a global carbon market. That's what the big boys are going to love dealing with this one, and explore the establishment of a multilateral insurance pool to help deal with natural disasters as a result from global warming. I hate using the term global warming. I just try to say change in the weather. The final paper to be released by the European Commission, the EU executive body, on Wednesday sets out the bloc's proposition ahead of negotiations in Copenhagen this December aimed at creating a global agreement to fight climate change. So the whole outcome of it is all the so-called first world countries are going to be taxed into the dirt for this. This big con, And last week I was going through many of the cons the same group that's run the history of the last 100 years have done in the past. So here we're into the next part of it, is to bring us all to our knees, to bring in a new economic system where we will ultimately serve the state. That's what it's about. It's astonishing. Last week, I talked about the revolution and how revolution has really been fairly continuous since the 1500s. When the Rosicrucian societies broke out at that time in the court of Queen Elizabeth I, and then pamphlets were plastered all over Paris the following century, and then Germany too, and other places, talking about a new world order. And that was taken up by other people that are well known in history, including Adam Weishaupt, who coined the term that was used on the seal of states, the United States, Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new world order. And it wasn't a grassroots thing. It didn't come from the bottom. No rebellion ever came from the public at the bottom. You might say a rebellion comes, but not a revolution. Revolutions are planned because they want to succeed. It takes sometimes a generation or two to plan the revolution. All successful ones do it that way. And I read from Bakunin, who was a professional revolutionary, and this is an article that he wrote in the journal El Progress of Geneva in 1869 to give you a clue about the associations that were involved and actually promoted revolution. It says, in this epoch, the bourgeoisie, I'll just say middle classes, they meant upper middle classes in those days, had created an international association, a universal and formidable one, Freemasonry. It would be a substantial error to judge the Freemasonry of the last century or even that of the first part of the present century, that's the 1800s, by what it is today. The middle-class institution par excellence, Freemasonry, in its development, in its growing power at first and later in its decadence, represented in a way the development, power, and moral and intellectual decadence of the middle classes. Today, fallen to the sad position of a senile old intriguer, it's a useless, sometimes malevolent, and always ridiculous nullity. Whereas before 1830, and especially before 1793, having gathered together at its core, with very few exceptions, all the minds of the elite. See, it was an elite movement. Revolution was from the elite. The most ardent hearts, the proudest spirits, the most audacious personalities, it had constituted an active, powerful, and truly beneficial institution. Now, there are many books of the period written, and before that, too, that was quite open about the fact that Freemasonry, it was through Freemasonry and their associations and the coffee houses in France and so on, that they gradually worked the people up, getting them ready for revolution. It's no secret the United States was founded by professional Freemasons, active Freemasons. And you can see there are symbols everywhere. But this Bakunin goes on, it is known that all the principal actors of the first revolution were Freemasons, and that when this revolution broke out, it was able to find, thanks to Freemasonry, friends and devoted and powerful collaborators in all other countries. And that's true. Thomas Paine was a professional revolutionary. He came over from England to take part in the American Revolution. Once it was over, he went to France to help them set up and run their revolution. A fact that was assuredly of great help in its victories, but it's equally clear that the triumph of the revolution killed Freemasonry. For once the revolution had largely fulfilled the aspirations of the middle classes, and had enabled it to displace the old nobility, the middle class went on quite naturally, after having been an exploited and oppressed class for such a long time, to become in its turn a privileged class, a class of exploiters, oppressive, conservative, and reactionary in nature, the most reliable friend and supporter of the state. And I'm going to go into this deeper after the following break. We'll be right back.
ShrimpUSA.org is now offering free shipping worldwide to better serve our customers. Our goal is to get these fine hemp products to you in the least amount of time so you can enjoy what the powder seeds and oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has a warning that the U.S. food supplies are dangerously low, and we urge you to protect your family with hemp storable foods today. Tomorrow may be too late. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. This incredible food source is loaded with enzymes so your body can digest the food you eat, and it creates an alkaline environment where cancer can't grow and parasites cannot live, and brings funguses, viruses, and bacterial levels down and to a halt. Try our powder seeds and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. If the body has the proper nutrition, it will heal itself. Ask yourself, why does our government not allow this crop to grow in the U.S.? This product is also great for pets and animals. Call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org today.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watts and I'm cutting through Matrix. History is always presented as little factions unrelated to the next faction, but nothing is further from the truth. We've had really perpetual revolution, sometimes bloody, but mainly through cultural alterations for centuries. And even though Bakunin decries masonry as becoming fat and obsolete, he's not telling quite the truth, because there are factions of it that kept going, and the pre-masonry was always subservient to the upper classes, the aristocracy, you might say. And you go to the history through Mackay's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, you'll see just that. You'll find out who is supposedly the heads of the Grand Lodge of England, for instance. And yet, at all times through history, you'll always find that it doesn't matter what side you think you're on, there's another hand controlling both of them and guiding it, because it's the outcome that's necessary for the thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. The synthesis is the goal. The conflict between the first two brings you to that goal. That's the whole point of it, in conflict. And it was the intelligentsia that had been behind all the major, the successful revolutions. When the people at the bottom riot, that's what it is. It's an unorganized riot. It's a last desperate stance to keep something that's been taken from them, generally. And if we don't understand that this is truly an ongoing intellectual war, which is very obvious today, then we'll never get the points at all. We'll never understand it. Because if you watch how the big foundations operate today, they use all the graduates of the universities, they fund the universities. The universities in turn become authorities, and they advise governments. And they're all on board across the whole planet on the same agenda. Go into the writings of Sir Thomas Huxley, the grandfather of Aldous Huxley. Sir Thomas Huxley took up the banner of Darwinism. And Darwinism is worth a good look at because it was a religion. A religion created to destroy once again all that was, to bring in something new. And they're still running on Darwinism today. Sir Thomas Huxley recruited a lot of well-known writers of the period, including H.G. Wells, and trained them at the Red Tie School, Red for Revolution. And their whole goal was to bring more intellectuals into the system for the revolution, to bring in a new world order. What is a new world order? What does it really mean? What they mean is that, as Jefferson called them, the natural aristocracy had the right to rule the world. The intelligentsia is what they're talking about. During the Cold War, that finished around 1989, I think, supposedly when the Berlin Wall came down, you'll find that pretty well all the spies, all of them in fact, that were double spies, double agents that worked for the Soviets. And before that, going to Adolf Hitler's Germany, the ones who worked for Adolf Hitler, all came from Oxford and Cambridge. They'd all been to Eton. They all came from the privileged class, not from the bottom ranks, the lower classes. Never happened. Constant revolution by the intelligentsia. And it's the young minds that are recruited at universities that's still ongoing for revolution, and they don't understand that very old people are conditioning their minds and giving them what they think is their generation's revolution. This is the constant technique that's always used. It's a planned future we're going into. And Sir Thomas Huxley, in his own writings, laid out the agenda in his book, Man Stands Alone. He said that the problems of the future will be overpopulation. That's always been a mandate for this. Eugenics is another thing. He talked about the creation of imbeciles and how many generations of imbeciles do you want? He said man is just an animal, basically, and would have to be treated as such. But he also talked about something called spirit, even though he was an atheist or a humanist. He called about spirit. Well, he was talking about the Masonic revolutionary spirit of fire. That's what they mean by that when they refer to spirit. And where does the whole origin of fire come from? Ancient symbology. For the illumined ones, fire destroys that which is substance and releases a heat and a light at the same time. It alters everything. Destroys all that was, but at the same time is giving something off that is new. It stands for pure, brilliant intellect as well. There's a book that goes into this by James H. Billington called Fire in the Minds of Men. And he was the official librarian for Congress, so he was no conspiracy nut. And I'll read a bit of this when I come back from this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, I'm Roger Mason, the inventor of Beta Prostate. Men, are you getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom? Is your love life not what it used to be? Many men don't realize these issues are often related to their prostate health. Prostate problems start about age 40, and by 50, over half of men already have a prostate problem. This only gets worse. What can you do? See a doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate. It is the well-researched natural formula that supports a healthy prostate, and it's made with pure beta-cytosterol, 11 essential minerals plus vitamin D. This is the best-selling prostate formula in the world. It's safe, it's healthy, and what every man over 40 should take for good prostate nutrition.
To try Beta Prostate risk-free, dial 1-800-362-5848. Call today for Beta Prostate and get Roger Mason's best-selling book free with your order. Dial 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johngliha.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. I'm going to read an introduction of Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Billington, Origins of the Revolutionary Faith. To say he was, at the time of writing it, he was the official librarian for Congress. And just before I read this, actually, I'd like to talk about, or just mention, I'm going to leave a link at the end of the show, where you can see how the London School of Economics gave us the trickle-down theory and how they ran, supposedly, the economy, this great intellectual group. It's attached to Oxford, of course. I think Oxford even set it up. Everything comes from Oxford and Cambridge. But it's quite interesting and worth a little look at. It explains the theory of the trickle-down theory of economics. Back to this book. It says, this book seeks to trace the origins of a faith, perhaps the faith of our time. Modern revolutionaries are believers, no less committed and intense than were the Christians or Muslims of an earlier era. What is new is the belief that a perfect secular, that's worldly order, will emerge from the forcible overthrow of traditional authority. This inherently implausible idea gave dynamism to Europe in the 19th century and has become the most successful ideological export of the West to the world in the 20th century. It's not a story of revolutions, but of revolutionaries, the innovative creators of a new tradition. The historical frame is the century and a quarter that extends from the wanings of the French Revolution in the late 18th century to the beginnings of the Russian Revolution in the 20th century. The theater was Europe and industrial era. The main stage were journalistic offices with great European cities within the cities. Because, you see, the intelligentsia and journalism always worked hand in hand, as they still do today. And their main method was propaganda. So propaganda was not invented by Bernays by any means. It was well understood as a science long before. At center stage stood the characteristic 19th century European revolutionary, a thinker lifted up by ideas, not a worker or peasant bent down by toil. He was part of a small elite whose story must be told from above, much as it may displease those who believe that history in general, and revolutionary history in particular, is basically made by socio-economic pressures from below. The people below are always used for revolutions, but they don't design them. It's always an elite who does it for you. This elite focus does not imply indifference to the mass human suffering which underlay the era of this narrative. It reflects only the special need to concentrate here on the spiritual thirst of those who think rather than on the material hunger of those who work. For it was passionate intellectuals who created and developed the revolutionary faith. This work seeks to explain concretely the tradition of revolutionaries, not to explain abstractly the process of revolution. My approach has been inductive rather than deductive, explorative rather than definitive, and an attempt to open up rather than cover the subject. My general conclusions can be stated simply at the outset, and for the sake of argument more bluntly than they may appear in the next that follows. The revolutionary faith was shaped not so much by the critical rationalism of the French Enlightenment, as is generally believed, as by the occultism and proto-romanticism of Germany. Occultism, that was hidden. This faith was incubated in France during the revolutionary era within a small subculture of literary intellectuals who were immersed in journalism, the media, fascinated by secret societies, and subsequently infatuated with ideologies as a secular surrogate for religious belief. Professional revolutionaries who first appeared during the French Revolution sought above all radical simplicity. Their deepest conflicts revolved around the simple words of their key slogan, liberty, equality, fraternity. It's funny because if you go into Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma from the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, you'll find that he goes through those three words and then he tells you that nothing could possibly exist, even though they used it to get the masses to go through revolutions for them. It says here, liberty had been the battle cry of earlier revolutions in 16th century Holland, 17th century England, 18th century America, which produced complex political structures to limit tyranny, such as separating powers, constituting rights, legitimizing federation. Well, that's getting lost and tossed out the window now. The French Revolution also initially invoked similar ideas, but the new and more collectivist ideals of fraternity and equality soon arose to rival the older concept of liberty. The words nationalism and communism, the older concept of liberty, were first invented in the 1790s to define the simpler, more sublime, seemingly less selfish ideals of fraternity and equality, respectively. The basic struggle that subsequently emerged amongst committed revolutionaries was between advocates of national revolution for a new type of fraternity and those of social revolution for a new type of equality. They always split you into two, even though you think you're on the same side. They'll always do that, get into factions. The French national example and republican ideal dominated the revolutionary imagination throughout the first half of the 19th century. Exiled French intellectuals from Poland and Italy largely fashioned the dominant concept of revolutionary nationalism, inventing most modern ideas on guerrilla violence and wars of national liberation, expressing their essential emotional ideal best in mythic histories, vernacular poetry, and operatic melodrama. They used all of the arts, as they still do today, as a main method of propaganda. because since people don't really think through things, don't reason through fiction, but you'll find they're very, very influenced through fiction, emotion. So emotion fixed with a topic will stay in the mind, and you'll go along with the emotion that you saw in the play, etc. Rival social revolutionaries began to challenge the romantic nationalists after the revolutions of 1830, and the socialist tradition increasingly predominated after the forming of the First International in 1864, and the movement of the revolutionary cause from French to German and Russian leadership. Social revolutionaries expressed their essential rationalistic ideal best in prose pamphlets and prosaic organizations. Their hidden model was the impersonal and dynamic machine of factory industry rather than the personalized but static lodge of the Masonic aristocracy. The Masonic aristocracy. No less fateful than the schism between national and social revolutionaries was the conflict among social revolutionaries that began in the 1840s between Marx and Proudhon. The former's focus was on destroying the capitalist economic system, and it clashed with the latter's war on the centralized bureaucratic state. If you notice, the system that's coming in now is a new economic system, and it's been shouted from the highest hilltops in the last few weeks. And it will be a new economic system, a planned society is what they're taking us to, where those at the top will live in incredible luxury, even though technically a lot of them will still serve the state, but they won't have to pay for anything. They'll still live in palaces and have servants, etc. The word intelligentsia and the thirst for ideology migrated east from Poland to Russia, and from a national to a social revolutionary cause. Though the Russian student radicals of the 1860s who developed a new aesthetic type of terrorism, Lenin drew both on this Russian tradition of violence and on German concepts of organization to create the Bolshevism that eventually brought the revolutionary tradition out of the wilderness and into power. The revolutionary faith developed in 19th century Europe only within those societies that had not previously legitimized ideological dissent by breaking with medieval forms of religious authority, and two, modified monarchical power by accepting some form of organized political opposition. In Northern Europe and North America, where these conditions were met by Protestant and parliamentary traditions, the revolutionary faith attracted almost no indigenous adherents. Thus, the revolutionary tradition can be seen as a form of political ideological opposition that arose first against authority in Catholicism in France, Italy, and Poland, and then against other religiously based autocracies in Lutheran Prussia and Orthodox Russia. What they did, you see, first to change everything, they looked at the system as it was. And the main opponent at one time, in fact, the only real opponent, was the Roman Catholic system. And therefore, they went to war with that first. Very intense wars. You have to look at the histories of the wars, the religious wars, to see how horrific and for how long they went on. Once that was done, the same groups that had courted any opposition and eventually the Protestant sects, they used them too. They had to destroy them as well in turn. So you're used and then you're destroyed, because the goal is a completely different new world order than the one you think. That's why you don't follow leaders. Do your homework and know what on earth is going on. It's interesting, too, that Lenin himself, who took over from Mazzini. Now, Mazzini was a revolutionary professional, again trained, and he also took over as the head of masonry for one point from Albert Pike. And who took over from him was Lenin, who then set up the Bolshevik, ultimately called the Soviet system in Russia. I've also gone through the fact that the Royal Institute of International Affairs was heavily involved all during that era. The Milner Group and those boys were heavily involved in it. Russia was called the second great experiment. The United States was the first. As they studied what they'd done, the kind of outcomes they had, and would they suit the purposes, or would they have to go further? How would they get to their next objective? That's why they're called experiments. Who does experiments? Scientists do experiments. Think of the words that you read. Before attempting to chronicle the drama, the dogmas, and the disputes of this new secular religion in the making, and it is a religion, it's important to linger on the mystery and majesty of faith itself. The heart of revolutionary faith, like any faith, is fire. Back to fire again. Ordinary material transformed into extraordinary form, quantities of warmth suddenly changing the quality of substance. If we do not know where fire is, what fire is, we do know what it does. It burns, it destroys life, but it also supports, as it is a source of heat, light, and above all, fascination. Fascination. Man who works with fire as homo faber also seems foredoomed in his freedom to play with it as homo ludens. Now, if you remember, those that have not been so jaded by all the recent slaughter that's gone on across the planet, I think you can remember the slaughter at Waco, when the government set people in the BATF out to wipe out a whole bunch of families and children. That was that was literally a symbolic act as well, to tell everybody that religion is over. You do no longer have any special privileges. It's over. And not only that, they hate you. They utterly hate you. Those who rule hate you. And at the end, when they set fire to it all and burn the whole place down with the people in it, there's videos out there where you'll see the BETF bowing to the flames. Ask what kind of brotherhood they belong to. Bowing to the flames. They love fire. Our particular history, or chapter in history, unfolds at a time of physical transformation in Europe that was almost as momentous as the first discovery of fire must have been in the midst of antiquity. The Industrial Revolution was permitting men to unleash fire to machines and to unleash firepower on each other with a force undreamed of in earlier ages. In the midst of those fires appeared the more elusive flame that Dostoevsky described in his most searching work of fiction ever written about the revolutionary movement, and that was The Possessed. He wrote about it in fictional work, but there's more written often about in fiction than they'll tell you in reality. And the story basically was about a small provincial town that was suddenly inspired by new ideas. And then afterwards a fire broke out, and a local official shouted at night, in the middle of the night, "The fire is in the minds of men," and that's hence the title of this book. Dostoevsky was writing under the impact of two great fires that disturbed him deeply and heralded the transfer of revolutionary leadership from France to Russia. These fires had broken out in Imperial St. Petersburg in the spring of 1861, where the emancipation of the serfs seemed to have inflamed rather than calmed passions, and in Imperial Paris 10 years later, where the flaming defeat of the Paris Commune ended forever the era of romantic illusions. The flame of faith had begun its migrations a century earlier, when some European aristocrats transferred their lighted candles from Christian altars to Masonic lodges. The flame of occult alchemists, which had promised to turn dross into gold, reappeared at the center of new circles. Now, what did I call those groups within the Royal Institute of International Affairs? They call them circles. Seeking to recreate a golden age, to recreate a golden age. You'll hear that over and over with the idealists of the day and past times as well. To recreate a golden age. Bavarian Illuminist conspiring against the Jesuits, French Philadelphians against Napoleon, Italian charcoal burners against the Habsburgs. When the most important anti-Napoleonic conspiracy was ridiculed for attempting to use as a lever something which is only a match, its leader replied that with a match, one has no need of a lever. One does not lift up the world, one burns it. You burn the world. The leader in spreading the conspiracy to Italy soon noted that the Italian flame had spread the fire of freedom, that's what they called it, the fire of freedom, to the most frozen land of Petersburg. There, the first Russian revolution occurred in December 1825. Its slogan was, "From the spark comes the flame." It was originated by the first man to predict an egalitarian social revolution in the 18th century, Sylvian Marechal, and revived by the first man to realize such a revolution in the 20th century, that was Lenin. He used it as the epigram for his journal. The journal is called The Spark. Always fire. Always fire. Our current mythic model for revolutionaries, early romantics, the young Marx, the Russians of Lenin's time, was Prometheus. Prometheus, remember, was he who stole the fire from the gods for the use of mankind. The Promethean faith of revolutionaries resembled in many respects the general modern belief that science would lead men out of darkness into light, a world run by a scientific elite. Back in a moment after these messages.
Attention RBN listeners. The Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johnglia.com.
Hi, folks. I am Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, continuing with some of the book Fire in the Minds of Men by Billington. It says, but there was also the more pointed millennial assumption that on the new day that was dawning, and they've got lots of paintings with the sun rising. You'll see that in, when the portrait of Benjamin Franklin toasting the new president, the first president of the United States, and he says, what he says in his own works, mind you, that's Benjamin Franklin, that is, in his own letters, he says, we toast this grand master of these United States. getting back to the book, it says, they said that the sun would never set, meaning light, intellect, would always rule from then on. Early during the French upheaval was born a solar myth of the revolution, suggesting that the sun was rising on a new era in which darkness would vanish forever, meaning ignorance. This image became implanted at a level of consciousness that simultaneously interpreted something real and produced a new reality. The new reality they sought was radically secular and stridently simple. The ideal was not the balanced complexity of the new American Federation, but the occult simplicity of its great seal, an all-seeing eye atop a pyramid over the words Novus Ordo Seclorum. In search of primal natural truths, revolutionaries looked back to pre-Christian antiquity, adopting pagan names like Anaxagoras, Chomé, and Anacharsis, Clootz, idealizing above all the semi-mythic Pythagoras as the model intellect turned revolutionary, and the Pythagorean belief in prime numbers, that's how they communicate, geometric forms, and the higher harmonies of music, that's the tones. In fact, from Pythagoras you get ton, the weight, the measurement, the tone, the sound, etc. We have the same Strasbourg musicians who played La Marseillaise in 1792 had introduced Mozart's magic flute. And Mozart was a Freemason, and if you've ever seen the magic flute, you'll see an awful lot in that particular show. To French audiences in the same city only a few months earlier, and Mozart's illuminist message seemed to explain the fuller meaning of the jour de gloire, the day of glory, that Roger de Lis's anthem had proclaimed. In the anthem it says, the rays of the sun have vanquished the night, the powers of darkness have yielded to light. The rising sun brought heat as well as light, for the fire was generally lit not at high noon on a tabula rasa by some philosopher king, but rather by some unknown guest arriving at midnight amidst the excesses of Don Giovanni's banquet, communism, the label Lenin finally adopted. It was invented not by the great Rousseau, but by a Rousseau of the gutter, indulgent fetishist, a nocturnal streetwalker in a pre-revolutionary Paris, Restif de la Breton. Thus the revolutionary label that now controls the destiny of more than 1 billion people in the contemporary world sprang from the erotic imagination of an ascetic writer. And by the way, you'll find an awful lot of their main writers were highly neurotic. Some had been kicked out of different countries for literally exposing themselves, although they couldn't help it, it seems. And they were the greatest propagandists of all that were used. Look into Voltaire, very interesting history. I hear the music coming in for tonight. And so from Hamish, myself, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night. And may your God or your gods go with you.
With recent international